Thank you all very much for coming. This is Podcast Professions and Shameless Promotion Combining Different Worlds. And I'm really, really pleased about the turnout, for real. I was actually walking over here going, everyone's going to want to hear about bad writing, right? Like, so I'm really glad that you guys are here. I'll introduce myself first quickly. My name is Gregory Wilson. I am an associate professor of English at St. John's University, and I teach classes in a variety of subjects, but in particular I'm beginning to focus on fantasy and science fiction and creative writing, which is what brings me here. My first book came out in 2007 from Clemson University Press, which is an academic book. This is my first novel, which came out 2 years ago, and I'll talk a little bit about that in the process of this talk. And then my next two books are being shopped by my agent as we speak. I'm also co-editing an anthology on speculative fiction and politics with some of the authors here. And lastly, I run a show called Speculate, which is a podcast for writers, readers, and fans of speculative fiction, along with co-host Brad Bollier, who has a trilogy just out from Nightshade Books, which I highly recommend, by the way. And you can find out more about that at speculatesf.com, and I'll talk a little bit about that here. What I want to do essentially is take a few minutes, probably about roughly 20 or so, and talk a little bit about outlining some of the reasons I wanted to propose this talk in the first place, and then the last 10 minutes roughly open it up and hopefully we can have some questions and discussion and things like that. Half hour is probably too short a time for issues that I'm just going to touch on here, but hopefully you know, we'll get us started in that direction. The reason I proposed this talk in the first place is because I think one of the things that I'm particularly interested in is not just speculative fiction in terms of its content, but also in terms of how we get that content to other people. I'm a writer, and I'm an academic, and I'm a musician, and all of those things involve communication. And so I'm always interested in figuring out how to combine these worlds in such a way that I can hopefully communicate to more people. That's kind of that one cynical way of saying that is that it helps sell books, but that's not really what it's about for me. It's about actually being able to speak to other people, and hopefully this talk is partly discussing how to do that. So I want to start with a couple of facts, basic facts about where I think we are in the industry and why promotion of this kind is, I think, important. Some of this is going to be very obvious to all of you and maybe new to some of you, but writing full-time as a full-time profession is an extremely difficult, although it's not impossible, proposition for three reasons. First of all, the industry is in flux. E-books are on the rise. How many people have a Nook or a Kindle or something? Yeah, so if I asked that question like 3 years ago, I wouldn't have had nearly that many people raising their hands. I have a Nook Color myself. And they are revolutionizing the way that we understand the industry. From the point of view of a writer, we don't necessarily want to be the pioneers in this field just because we don't know what the field is exactly. And the publishing industry is in a similar boat. Working in favor of the publishing industry is that it has the smoking wreck of the music industry to look at and say, this is not how we're supposed to do it. But the differences between the two of them are instructive, I think. The music industry, unlike the publishing industry, spent many, many years doing everything it could to abuse and take advantage of its content providers. This is why the vast majority of musicians out there do not shed a single tear for the loss of the recording industry of America and groups like that, because to them, it's simply cutting out the middleman. And I speak as someone who has produced and released albums and has no problem at all with what's happened on that side. But the publishing industry is a little bit different. The authors have a different relationship with the publishing industry, and to a certain degree, the writers still depend on the publishing industry for things like distribution, and especially for things like acceptance, for having this belief that the stuff that you produce through a so-called traditional publishing angle is worthy for people to look at. So the gatekeeping model, let's say, is still one that holds sway, although that's changing rapidly. And no one is certain, in other words, how everything's going to shake out in terms of book pricing and distribution and stuff like that in the long term. Second, the emergence of the word processor and the ubiquitous presence of the internet means that you have a lot more people writing now than you ever did before, and a lot more people submitting things than you ever did before. And the vast majority of this is not necessarily based on extra talent that's arisen, but just on extra access, right? So people have bigger megaphones. And on the one hand, that provides a great opportunity for access, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The drawback is it means there's a lot more white noise, and it means that now, in some ways, it it is harder to stand out than it would have been the case, again, 10, 15, 20 years ago when I was doing my graduate work back in the mid-90s to the late 90s. You know, this was not even on the horizon, at least to the same degree. And the pace has accelerated to such a degree that we now have a lot more people trying to contribute. And that makes it a little bit harder for writers on an individual level to stand out. One of the things that hopefully I'll talk about within the process of this talk. And then third and most obviously, this is not going to be a shock to anyone, the economy is lousy. And while the economy is lousy, that affects everybody, including the publishing industry. And so editors are being laid off, publicists are being laid off, you know, people who originally did marketing and PR for these publishing firms are increasingly being laid off. And that has put not only pressure on the publishing houses to make sure that the people they publish really succeed, which means they take fewer risks, which means they look for more sort of guaranteed properties as they understand it, but it's also added more leverage to the gatekeepers, particularly agents, and that means that agents have become even more important than would have been the case before. And so as a consequence, there's a lot of threats, okay, that are out there. The benefit of all this is that it also provides opportunities, and it provides opportunities in a couple of major ways. One, access, as I mentioned before. There are many, many more markets than have ever been the case before that are willing to publish your work, if you're willing to do work that is done online. That is the case both academically. I've had lots of work that's been done in online e-journals that are peer-reviewed and which are starting to, you know, meet sort of the standards for academics, and in creative work. And so there's a lot of resources out there, which Raylan.com, which many of you may know about, R-A-L-A-N.com, that website will list a lot of these new markets. And so you have the opportunity to get your work published, even larger work, not just short fiction, but novellas and novelettes and novels even, on some of these emerging markets. It also means that you're able to produce this work and get it to people who otherwise would not have had access in other countries, in countries that have less access. I recently interviewed for Speculate, the show that I mentioned before, Aliette Dubodard, who is a Campbell Award finalist and a BSFA winner, and has just released her second book, I believe it is, Harbinger of the Storm, and her third book is coming out from Angry Robot at the end of this year. She is half French, half Vietnamese. She lives in Paris. English is her second language, and she's writing about speculative fiction set in the Aztec world. So Aliette is not what you would call sort of the typical mainstream, you know, subject matter. It's not what we're talking about here. And one of the things that she said has been so beneficial to this new world is that non-Anglophone countries have access to the work that she's produced, because Angry Robot, in addition to having print versions available in the US, UK, and Australia, also has electronic digital right management free versions available as well. And so that's given her a whole host of readers that would not have been possible for her even 5 or 10 years ago. And so there are a number of opportunities that this world presents, as much as challenges that this world presents as well. So all of this maybe we can summarize in the following way. Succeeding at writing is difficult but not impossible. To be successful given the modern climate, though, one needs to take advantage of the particular strengths he or she has. And so to me, what this adds up to is promotion and networking, using connections available to us, done at a reasonable level. And I'll talk a little bit about this at the end, but it's not just promotion and networking nonstop. It's not just you release one book and then you do nothing but promote, 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 and you hit every website and every message board and every email, and you're out hawking your wares on a street corner. You know, that kind of thing, which lots of authors do, is exhausting and embittering and ultimately isn't going to advance your career, in my opinion. And so hopefully some of the things I can talk about with my own experience and that we'll talk about at the end are alternative and more effective ways of doing that kind of thing. So let me talk a little bit about my experience and how I've been able to tie some of what I've done together to get a lot of this stuff published. I finished my first book, which was an early version of this, in 2002. And the response from agents and publishers was generally positive. I had a lot of people who said they liked it. I had a number of requests for full and partial manuscripts. But what I heard over and over again were variations on the same theme. This is good work, but the market is saturated with epic fantasy. I love this, but I don't think I can sell it. The market is oversold. And I heard some variation of that over and over again. I've always had a little bit of a stubborn streak, probably maybe because there's an innate laziness where I don't want to waste work that I did. You know, damn it, if I sat in front of that computer, I was darn well going to get this thing out somehow. And so I didn't want to give up on it, even though there were a lot of challenges that sort of stood in my way. And I started looking for fantasy and science fiction conventions with significant emphasis on writing, or at least a strong writing track, figuring that if I chose wisely, I would be able to connect with professionals from different parts of the industry. In other words, I could get FaceTime with some of these people, and hopefully that would allow me to get my work published. Working for me in this effort was my own background. I was an academic already, so I had a publication history. I had articles which had been published in peer-reviewed journals and book chapters and things like that, all of which indicated that I was at least capable of producing someone that someone liked, right? Someone somewhere said, okay, this guy is not a fool. I guess we can actually publish his work. And although it wasn't in fantasy and science fiction, it demonstrated that I had some kind of seriousness of purpose, that I wasn't going to flake out on the people who would theoretically take a chance on my creative work. I was also on the tenure track at my university, and so my courses that I taught in fantasy fiction, and then soon thereafter creative writing, meant, presumably, that I would know something about the field. That was a particular strength of mine which I could draw upon and bring to people to show them that even though my work wasn't in the creative field yet, I had proven that I could produce in another field, and that was important to them as well. I went to Gen Con in 2005, which is a major gaming and fantasy convention in Indianapolis. And I went to a panel organized by Gene Raby and the Writers Symposium, which is the writer's track at Gen Con. It was moderated by a person who's now a Hugo nominee, actually John Helfers, who was the acquisitions editor for Techno Books. That's a book packager that does work for Five Star and Gale Cengage, which is the publisher of this book. I introduced myself to John after the panel. I managed to convince him, I guess, that I wasn't some delusional nutcase, you know, writing a book about gobbets that threw a bracelet of power in the volcano of apocalypse. You know, maybe I was doing something a little different than the norm. And I apparently succeeded well enough that he agreed to take a look at the manuscript. He and I went back and forth a few times with feedback and revision. He made an offer on the book in late 2007. I accepted in 08, and it was published as The Third Sign, this book you see, in 2009. In the meantime, I had been invited to join the Writers' Symposium at Gen Con. And between that and the book offer, I began to get invited to various conventions and conferences as a panelist and reader, and I got involved with other writing organizations on and offline. Helping on the panelist front was something else from my personal background, and that was that I have a background in public speaking and debate, both on the national and international level, and I was the coach, the debate coach at Brandeis University here in Waltham, actually, for several years. All of that meant, presumably, that I knew how to speak and to communicate, and so I could produce well in a panel environment, especially for someone like Jean, who has to field a lot of different people who are interested in the symposium. She liked to know that I wasn't going to, again, flake out on her and do something weird, or, you know, more weird than most of us who love this field. You know, and I was going to at least be able to sort of be in the conversation. And that meant that I could enter the community of science fiction writers and fantasy writers and feel as if I was on some equal footing with them. That, combined with the book offer, meant that my profile was beginning to be raised a little bit. So in other words, I got my first publishing contract, not just because of the quality of my writing, which is the most important thing, but because I used my academic background to burnish my credentials, I used my public speaking background to perform well as a panelist and reader. And the connections that I made at Gen Con have gone further. I have an article just published in the recent Syphil Bulletin. That is because Gene Raby knew me and invited me as a member of the symposium to contribute an article, something I wouldn't have done if I hadn't been a member of the symposium, and I wouldn't have been a member of the symposium if I hadn't gone to Gen Con and started talking to all these people. And so it's such a small world in a way that we live in, such a small community, relatively speaking, that all of these things ultimately interconnect. So much for that side of things. The podcasting side of things, which many of you came here for, because I heard you guys talking about this before, was another option, another thing that I worked on in terms of my own background. I started my podcast career by recording conversations of myself with some friends from debate from back in the day, which eventually grew into something we called the Mech Report. This is a site for comedy and news and the like. And one of the people on that show, Russ Guberman, is a professional comedian now in LA who worked for Boing Boing and now works for Frequency as a video aggregator. So he also was able to take some of what he learned and use that for his own connections. But inspired by that show, I started a show called Upon Further Review, which was a review podcast. It reviewed books, it reviewed movies, games, things of that kind. And in the process of doing that show, I began to interview a few of the authors whose books we had reviewed. So I including, for example, James Patrick Kelly, whom we interviewed after meeting him here at ReaderCon after a podcast panel that he had done. I also was able to interview people like Minister Faust and stuff like that. During one review show, we reviewed David Anthony Durham, whose first book was called Acacia, second book was called The Other Lands. And I also, in that same show, we reviewed an independent film. That independent filmmaker later emailed me and said he appreciated the positive things we said about the film, and did I happen to know David Anthony Durham because he was looking for a new project, specifically an epic fantasy. I happened to know from a discussion with David at ReaderCon that his work was not available because it had already been optioned by a major firm out in LA. And so I said to him, I said, you know, I'd be happy to introduce you to David. He's a nice guy, but I know that his work is out on the market. But I know this guy who has this book that's an epic fantasy, and I can get you in touch with him. And that's ultimately what I did, and we went back and forth, and he optioned The Third Sign for a film. Now, most film books that get optioned for films never get made into movies, and it's quite possible that will happen here. I have no way of knowing whether it will. But even the fact that I'm in the conversation is a consequence of the podcast work that I had done and the connections I tried to draw between podcasting and science fiction and fantasy and my writing career in that sense. When I started Speculate, the show I mentioned before that I do now, with fellow speculative fiction author Brad Bollier, who, by the way, is also a contact I met at the Writer Symposium, I drew on my experience with my previous two shows to put it together. We've now been able to discuss the work of and interview Amal El-Motar, Saladin Ahmed. Saladin Ahmed is a Campbell Award finalist. N.K. Jemisin, who was a Nebula Award winner. Michael Swanwick, Jim Kelly, Jonathan Strahan, Kevin J. Anderson, Aliette Dubodard, and Pat Rothfuss. And I'll say this because this will please him when he hears this. Pat is a machine. You know, our download numbers shot up like this the minute that Pat made an offhand reference to an interview he did with us on his blog. So we're big fans of Pat. And we're going to be doing a host of other interviews with Ed Greenwood and other writers within the field, editors and artists down the line. And that's a lot of people for a show that's only been running for about 6 months. We were able to get most of these people because now, as a writer and author and editor, I know a lot of these people, and I can invite them to be on the show. They, in turn, can tell other people about this show and ask them to submit work to them. And so we have a pipeline now with Nightshade that produces new work and says, do you want to review this book? Do you want to look at an advanced review copy of this work? And so forth and so on. And so it has not only helped the show has helped our work and given us a promotional arm with which we can promote our stuff. That, in turn, allowed me to get an invite to a novel writing workshop called Wellspring Workshop, coordinated by Brad, the co-host, which is continuing the Starry Heaven, Blue Heaven model that produced The Wind-Up Girl, which all of you have probably heard of before. So all of this kind of combined together allowed the podcasting to help my career in writing and my writing career to help my podcasting. And so those things have mutually benefited what I've been doing online and off. So there's a couple of conclusions that I'd want to draw, and then I would like to open it up and see what you folks all think about this. First of all, promotion is fundamental. There's no question that promoting yourself in a lot of different venues is important. The question, though, is how you're going to do it. Everyone, or just about everyone now, has some kind of a website, right? Everyone, or just about everyone now, has a blog. Or they have a Twitter account. Or they have a Facebook account. In fact, just by a quick show of hands, so I find that I'm not talking wrongly, how many people have one of those things that I mentioned? Website, Facebook, Twitter, something? No, one of them. Okay, right. So everyone has something like this. And that's great, and it's important that you have that online presence. But as you will all have noticed, there's one, two, three, there's almost 15 or 16 of you in here, and all of you just raised your hands. What that indicates is, and it's, if I ask this question of hundreds, most of the hundreds of people would raise their hands too. That means that it's difficult to stand out from that group. It's sort of a baseline, right? You need to have a website, but everyone has it. So just having a website isn't going to help. In my judgment, what you need to do is to be able to draw upon your background, your abilities, your professional connections to make your promotional efforts maximally efficient. In my case, my academic background helped me get the publishing contract. My debate background helped me get the panel appearances. My podcasting background helped me get connections with authors and editors in the speculative fiction community, a film option, a prominent workshop invite, and another way of communicating with my readers. Those creative areas have informed my academic work as well. I have a grant this summer from St. John's University because I am now able to show them work that I do on my creative stuff is actually work that influences my academic environment, right? Because I teach courses in creative writing, and I teach courses in fantasy and science fiction, and I can bring authors to my students and have them speak to them directly about what the publishing industry is like for them. So all of these venues ultimately inform each other. Your environments may be different. Your backgrounds may be different. You may not have the academic background, but you would have other backgrounds that you'd be able to draw upon. Many of you, for example, may work in a corporate environment and may be able to use what you know of the way that your particular business runs to be able to speak to members that that business typically serves. For example, if you work for a nonprofit agency, let's say, and you work for, there's one here in Boston called United for a Fair Economy, a friend of mine works for them. If you're able to produce a short story or a novel or something like that, which ties in with the theories of social justice and economic justice, you can promote that work through your contacts with something like United for a Fair Economy. That's something which other people will not have access to that you will. If you happen to be a musician or you have experience or knowledge of people in the theater or dance or the visual arts, you can draw upon those particular things to promote your work to those particular communities. And the benefit of living in the world that we do is that it's easy to access those communities, right? You can easily find sites that connect us to visual artists or dance or things of that kind. And that makes it very important, I think, to think about what you're individually able to bring to the table that I or other people may not be able to bring in. Now, none of this is to say, and this is the most important part in a way of what I'm going to say, none of this replaces the number one most important thing, and that is your craft. Of all the things you need to do, what you need to do most is work on and improve your writing. It's something we all have to do. And ultimately, no matter how good you are at doing these various promotional things that I've talked about, it's not going to matter if your work is terrible. So you need to continually improve your craft and focus your energies on improving your craft. That said, if you can draw upon your own individual experiences and knowledge to be able to go forward and use those to reach these communities that I've discussed, it will make it a lot easier then for the work that you've worked on, your writing that you've worked on, to be seen by that larger audience, by those communities. So, having said all of that and talked on at you for 20 minutes, I want to open it up to all of you. Questions, comments, or anything like that? Please.
Okay, you said something a million times and it was never fun. You say, go out on the internet in particular to connect to these communities.
Okay.
How do you do that? Nobody has been able to answer that question for me. I have done a lot of theater. I have a CD out. Okay. The second one out. You know, so I have these communities. I'm not, at present time, part of any of them.
Okay. Let me ask you.
I have no network of any kind.
Okay. So let me ask you a follow-up to that, then. You do have networks that are not online networks, though?
No networks.
You have no networks at all? Okay.
Yeah, I do, but I don't want to... What a network really is, I have a family, I have a few friends.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
My friends don't read science fiction.
Gotcha, okay. I'm in the same boat. I feel your pain.
And they don't listen to my music, and they don't go to the theater.
I feel your pain. Okay, but I would bet, though, that you would know some people that have listened to your music, right? I mean, you've given your CDs to people. Some people have given you comments about that or feedback.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that I think is important is starting in a small scale, right? Starting in a small kind of limited group of people and trying to find out from them what interested those people in particular about your work. Is there a common element? Is it just their friends and family members? Well, maybe. Or is it that something in particular about your music, let's take that for starters, something about your music actually interests them and they find it interesting and want to listen to more of it, right? Having gathered that information, you can then start looking at several, and I'll give you a couple of example sites, okay, places that you can look at that maybe you can maybe tap into, all right? Using the example of a place like, for example, Red Room. I don't know if you've heard of that before.
No, I've never heard of most of the things you mentioned.
Okay. So Red Room is a site that is... Has anyone else heard of Red Room? Okay.
No.
Red Room is principally a site for authors and writers, but it is a site which appeals to and sort of tries to have a big tent philosophy where it appeals to artists of all different stripes and kinds, so visual artists, theater artists, you know, people like that, to come and become a part of a community of what is principally authors. So in other words, they do outreach. It's a site which is out of California, and they will talk to other people about, come to Red Room and take a look at the work that's being done. They'll feature authors on that site. They featured me. They also feature authors like Barack Obama. Clearly, they didn't feature me at the same time. They're like, Barack Obama, and then someone not very important like Rick. But the point was that they took, so their marketing angle, what they do as marketers, sort of takes the pressure off you to have to market to those communities you don't know how to reach. If you go on to a place like Red Room, they in a way become the gatekeeper, the middleman, the people that can then promote your work to other groups and other types of people.
So what do you do when you go on to Red Room?
When you go on to Red Room, they give you an opportunity to sign up for a site, and they will basically give you, you know, so you give them their information about email, things like that, and you set up a site with them. In that site, you're able to put the things that you specifically work on, books that you may have written, stories that you may have done, music that you may have produced, art that you may have painted, you know, things of that kind. And you're able to upload a lot of that information or links to that information onto your site. You then, in the process of doing that, are then made aware of you. So the people at Red Room know about you, and then they say, okay, I want to find out more about this person. What you do then is start connecting with the communities on Red Room. So there are places on Red Room that you can go, links that you'll see when you set up that initial site that will talk about communities of visual artists or authors or things like that. They will have message boards where you can go there and you'll see topics about people saying, hey, I'm, you know, doing this work on, you know, this historical retrospective of Picasso. Has anyone done any work on that? Hey, I'm looking into, you know, some of the work, some ballet, and I'm looking for more information on Balanchine. Does anyone have information on that? And by becoming involved in that kind of online virtual network, you begin to, just as you would at a place like ReaderCon, begin to make connections and contacts with those people. And in the process of doing that, you are then able to become someone that they will then turn to for information as well. Now, this is going to start really slowly, and I'm not saying this is a perfect solution and that overnight you're going to be right, but it's a start, and it's the kind of thing that will allow you then to be effective and efficient in managing the way you promote. So that's kind of my short answer, but and I feel your pain.
That's a good
totally
short answer.
Okay, all right.
It's not short, but it's a good answer.
Okay, all right.
That's so the kind of thing I'm looking for.
Okay. Others? Questions or comments? Or thoughts? Yeah, please.
Could you tell us about your podcasting setup?
Like,
what do you use?
Sure. I use a, let's see. The mic, so I, okay, without getting too technical about it, I use a set of headphones and a separate mic called a Beyerdynamic mic, also Beyerdynamic headphones, that plug into my desktop computer. And the desktop computer, and it's really as simple as that. I use Audacity to record. When I do interviews, I use Skype, which is amazing. And Skype allows me to interview people all the way from Paris, France, that was where Aliette was when we interviewed her, all the way to Wisconsin, which is where my friend Brad, my co-host, lives, to right next door, you know, to places in New York that I've done interviews as well. And using that program, Skype, and Audacity, and another program, which I'll tell all of you about, called PowerGramo, PowerGramo, that integrates with Skype. And so what it means is when you start a call in Skype, it will start recording, and it will record it into a WAV file, which you can then edit in Audacity. Once that's done, you can then upload it to, and there's numerous examples that I can't get into because it would take too long, you can upload it to websites that are out there like Blogger or Blogspot or places like that that already have kind of a built-in template. Or if you're ambitious, or if you happen to have a friend, like I do, who does web design, you can have him construct a site for you, and then you can upload information to that site, including those podcasts that you've done. Once that's done, it's simply a matter of giving that information again to these middlemen that I talked about before. Red Room, sites like, for example, Absolute Right, absoluteewrite.com. That's a site that is a huge message board. And again, you can simply post a message saying, I've got this new podcast about this author or this particular subject. Please come and check it out. If you go to a website like, for example, Backspace, which is just as it sounds, Backspace, that is another message board. It is another specific to authors message board. There's a small fee for that. I think it's about $20 for the year. But once you pay that fee, you have access to the year to this message board, all of authors. You guys know the book Water for Elephants that was made into a movie? Sarah Gruen started out on Backspace, and in fact workshopped her stuff through the message board on Backspace. So she got her start there. And so a lot of people that you will know right now are people that actually ended up or still contribute to places like Backspace. So yeah, so that's kind of, so the equipment's pretty simple. It's more what you do with it after that makes the difference. Please.
So if I'm going to start a podcast, your first bit of advice to promote it would be to put it on these sites. site?
Yes, to put it on the sites, absolutely.
Okay, and then what
my first bit of advice is to make sure that it's as good audio-wise as you can make it. And by that, I just mean don't get a junky mic. You know, get a nice mic. Doesn't have to be like hundreds of dollars, but, you know, get a nice quality mic with nice quality headphones. That's all. So it sounds good. Then, yes, promote it.
Put it on these sites. Yep. And then how do I get that even promoted better internally on those? Are there tricks I can do?
People
to notice it more.
Yes. One way to do it is something which is going to sound a little odd, and it is to not push that particular thing all the time, by which I mean contribute to conversations on the site without every third word saying, hey, by the way, have you checked out my podcast at blah, 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 blah.com?
Right. Participate, but don't.
Exactly. And over time, if you participate, exactly, and if you participate well and thoughtfully, the way that everyone here does, people will come to you at that point because they'll be interested in what you have to do. I want to make one caveat about this too. Don't overdo the amount of time you spend on promotion to the extent of not writing your own work. I said that before, but I really want to emphasize it. The most important thing you can do to promote your first book is to write a better second book. And I've heard that from other authors before. So don't overdo, you know, the amount of time that you spend doing this. And then ideally, the podcast, to take that example, is something you should like doing anyway, separate from whether it's going to help your writing. The idea then is to tie together these interests that you like and have them promote themselves, if that makes any sense. But not, I have to do this to promote and this to promote and this to promote, if you see what I mean. Yeah, please.
Hey, excuse me. As an aspiring writer who has yet to actually get anything published, I find myself sort of in this chicken and egg situation where I don't want to go out and start a podcast or blog or something and begin promoting when I don't have any content that's out there that I'm trying to sell, because that feels deeply pretentious.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, if it helps you actually sell something and I'm not doing it, then I'm not going to sell anything if I'm not promoting myself as a brand. So it's just weird. Is there a way to go first, or do you throw everything against the wall and hope something sticks?
No. I'd say no to throwing everything against the wall and seeing what sticks. But I would say that one of the things you can do, I mean, to be honest with you, when I went to Gen Con, this was in 2005. It was before I even had this book published. So what I was working on was the academic articles that I had published to that point. Now, those were real, and they were legitimate, but they were academic articles, and I was fairly early even in my academic career. So in a way, there was a little bit of chutzpah of me just coming up and saying, well, you're going to want to publish my book because what? Well, because what have you done? Well, but, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of chutzpah involved with that, but I think the difference was that I felt that I was a good writer. I'd worked hard at it. I felt like I was going to continue to be better. And I felt like I had those things in my background, the speaking background, the academic background, that I could use to demonstrate that they would transfer right to another field. And so I don't, for you, it may be something entirely different, but I guarantee there is something in each one of yours individual backgrounds that will help you stand out from other people. And if you have interest in that aspect of your background, you can, in a way, almost start by looking at that and thinking, how can I use that to support the writing that I'm going to do? So in other words, that becomes your baseline. Your baseline becomes, well, I've done this work in the corporate world. I've done this work in the legal world. I've done this work in the nonprofit world. I've done this work, you know, I'm a research librarian. I have done all, you see what I'm saying? And so whatever individual ability or talent that you have, that becomes the base from which you're then able to sort of launch whatever your promotional career is going to be. And it gives you time to keep working on your writing, which is ultimately the number one way that you're going to get noticed, is to write a hell of a book. So that's the other thing to think about. Sure.
I would add that the way that I'm going to approach this is I have interest, and so I'm going to pursue a podcast for that. And then we'll see if I actually like doing it.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. And if you try one of these things and you don't like it, please, in the name of all that's holy, don't keep doing it. I mean, I must go, like, da-da-da-da, you know, don't. It's not supposed to be that kind of thing. It's supposed to be something that you get joy out of. And that goes for writing as well. Writing is a very difficult career. And if you want to get yourself involved in it and you find, you know, this, I love reading, but writing, oh my God, too hard. I don't want to put that. That's fine. That's totally a decision that you can make for yourself. I think it comes through. It would come through to my students if I hated teaching. Fortunately, I don't. I love teaching. It would come through to my readers if I hated writing. Fortunately, I don't. I love writing. So what you love, has to be at the base of what you do. And presumably you're all here because you love science fiction and fantasy, and that's because you're all good people. But the point is, you love what you love has to be the foundation from which you promote, I think. Please.
The way I see it from what I've been hearing, you can have a blog or a podcast, either
sure.
one, and not too many people promote it. You do it right about something you're interested in.
Yeah.
And then if you get self-publishing, you say, oh, by the way, I just published this. You know, your 10th blog, maybe your 100th blog.
Maybe.
Or a podcast, whatever.
Right.
But the first question is, once you start that blog or that podcast,
yeah.
how do you get people to come to it? And
This is the part that always leaves me. I understand. Well, this again is sort of, and I don't mean to give an unsatisfactory answer, but this goes back to the message boards thing as far as online is concerned. That is, going to some of these sites, which are free, Absolute Right is free, going to some of those sites and becoming involved in those conversations. Absolute Right has something like 25 different categories: romance, novel, thriller, you know, detective fiction, science fiction, fantasy. They also have, by the way, online writing workshops and sort of locked areas where you can participate and post some of your work for people to give you online critiques. It's a good, I wouldn't end with that because, you know, these are just people on the faceless internet, but it's a good way to start getting involved in the conversation. And by promoting your work, by going to some of these message boards, and I'm by the way, I'm focusing a lot online, but offline, I'll talk about that in just a second, is important too, but online, that's how you get the conversation started. Offline, a lot of what you can do offline starts at a place like this. I'm a huge fan of conventions and conferences. I think there is nothing that substitutes for speaking to people directly, like I'm doing with all of you folks. Going up to this editor, this guy John Helfer, is at this conference who didn't know me from Adam, and saying, I have this book, and I'm really excited by the way you described some of this stuff. I wondered if we could maybe talk a little bit about this, and being able to give him a business card. Finally, I had a use for the bloody business card that my university gave me. All that really made a difference, because he had a face to put with a name. And being right in this room right now is an example of a way that you can start that, by being able to exchange communication information with other people. That way you have not just a virtual community of people you know, but a physical community of people you know. And you'll see these same people, in this case at Boscone or Aresia, right, or you know, some of you may even, please do, go out to Gen Con or places like that, or Worldcon or World Fantasy. If you love coming to these things because you love hearing authors speak about their work, then you're going to love coming to these things because you love getting a chance to maybe speak to others about this work as well. And so this is a community which will support you, and you can become a part of it to the degree you want to by going to places like these conventions and conferences and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Have you ever paid for any sort of online advertising?
No, and I would advise against it unless you're really in a position. No, I'm not even going to give a caveat. No. Don't pay, because there's way, 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 way too many scam artists out there. There's way, way, way too much stuff. The law always is that money flows towards the author, not away.
Thank you.
You don't pay anyone ever. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Harlan would pat me on the back, no doubt. You never, ever, ever, ever pay money for anyone to promote your work, even an advertisement like a Google ad or something like that. It's just not cost-effective. It's sort of like, you know, the internet, everyone says, well, you put something on the internet, and immediately everyone will come and find it. Well, it's like, you know, walking into New York City and saying, you know, I have, you know, a hot dog stand. Everyone will buy my hot dog. There's 8 million people who live in New York City. Well, yeah, but they've got lots of other hot dog stands to go to, and they're not going to come to you. They're not going to know. I have this sense there's a hot dog stand on 56th and Broadway. I got to get, you know, they're not going to go to you for that reason. And so Google ads, I'm afraid, or advertisements like that, especially early in your career, are not really efficient use of your time. It makes more sense to start with small circles, to start with groups like this, and to start with even groups of friends and people like that, and gradually begin to spread the information out. If you have friends who have Twitter accounts or Facebook accounts, and you have a short story that you've just posted on your site, you could tell them, hey, can you guys tell everyone, can you tweet this story that I just did? Or can you post on Facebook, hey, go check out my friend's short story. It's a small thing, but it's the kind of thing which can lead to bigger things. And that, I think, is a much more cost-effective way to sort of promote yourself rather than just throwing money at something without knowing if that's the best way, you know, if that's what you ultimately want to do to promote. So, yeah. Yes?
You mentioned putting a short story up in your site.
Mm-hmm. This depends on who you ask, but if you ask John Scalzi, he would tell you that you should put everything ever, or Cory Doctorow, everything ever on your site. I don't really agree with Cory to that degree, but if you put a portion, if you put a short story of yours up on the site, it is possible that that short story will be theoretically less interesting to a print publisher to publish, maybe. But to me, that's totally irrelevant. If you put a really interesting short story on your site, and you get people fired up and interested in it, and people say, this is a great story, have you seen this person? You will be astonished how much that sort of act of generosity for you giving that short story away, in essence, will bring back to you 100-fold in terms of offers for other anthologies, for people who may pay you for your work. I'm not saying to put everything that you have immediately up on your site, and you know, you have a novel, put it up there, a short story, put it up there. But I do think that on a limited basis, if you can, and I have samples, for example, I have three chapters each of The Third Sign and three chapters of Icarus, my second novel, which is being shopped right now, up on my website. Why? Because I think it's work that's interesting. I hope that it will get people interested in my writing. And if they see that, they'll say, I guess this guy's not bad. I want to go over to Amazon. I have a prominent link on my site where they can go to do that. They can purchase The Third Sign, and they can find out more about my work. The more of an online platform I build by doing that, the easier it is for my agent to then say to publishers, potential publishers, this guy's been all over the place. He's got a lot of stuff that's out there. A lot of people, there's this buzz about him. You should find out more about him. So in my opinion, it only makes sense to put work that you're really proud of on your site, not all of it, but a little bit of it anyway, a short story or two, something like that, to get people interested in your work. One caveat, make sure when you put it on the site, it's as good a story as it would be if you were sending it to a potential publisher. You want it to be polished. Anything you put on the internet is forever. You know the thing, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? What happens on your website does not stay on your website, okay? What happens on your website is on the internet forever. And so you want to make sure that your best work, as the best that you can do at that moment, is out there for people to see. So don't overdo it. Don't put your whole catalog on there. But a short story or two, absolutely, I think it can only help you. Or a sample of your novel, something like that. Sure. Correct.
You might make a career that way completely by accident, and you might end up posting an entire thing for free, having people pay you for it, and then having publishers come after you for it.
Well, how do they pay you?
Well, you give them buttons so they can press donate, and then they give you money.
For example, PayPal. Anybody can.
I never understood PayPal.
Okay. Well, anybody can set up a PayPal account. You can do it for free, and basically it links into your email. And once you have the email account linked to it, people can click on your PayPal account, and you will get money through, you know, linked through your email to do that. So that's a very handy thing to do. So yes, that's a good point. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. This is not the case anymore that you ruin your career by doing it. I would be cautious if you want to send a novel, say, to a major publisher. I would be careful about posting that all on your site because there is a little bit of gray area still whether publishers are going to want to publish something that's essentially already published, if that makes any sense. But certainly excerpts of it, or again, short stories or other things like that, flash fiction. People who write flash fiction, these very, very, very short stories, a lot of people I know will put several of their flash fiction stories, because they're so short, up on their websites and will use those as sort of gates, let's say, to get you to the rest of the work of that author and that particular question. So. Yeah, please.
So essentially, if you're suggesting teasers, you know. If we put up a small portion of an interesting portion of, say, a novel,
yep.
Then people see it, they'll get interested, they'll want more,
yep.
And then you generate that interest. Now.
That's exactly right. And in fact, I forgot to mention one promotional thing that I did. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the computer game Neverwinter Nights. But I happened to track down a guy who is this wunderkind who went to Harvard, who was a computer programmer, and he also loved science fiction and fantasy. I found him on one of these message boards, and I contacted him and said, listen, I have this novel, and I happen to play this game, Neverwinter Nights 2. I wonder if you would be interested in doing kind of a teaser version of this for Neverwinter Nights 2, which he did. And so you'll find on my site a link to this free downloadable module, so you can actually play. This is super cool to me because I'm a game geek. The first 6-7 hours, roughly, it's about 6-7 hours of gameplay, and it's the first few chapters of my book. Now, again, that's been downloaded probably 1,500 times. I don't know how many of those people went and running over to my, you know, if you think of it as one-to-one, that's a problem. It's not like everyone who reads your writing is immediately going to go and buy something from Amazon. But it's not the point. They'll recognize your name. Your name will sink into their head. When they see you at conferences and conventions, they may go to see you. They may even, I mean, again, I don't know whether this is true. I'm incredibly excited that we had such a great turnout tonight. Maybe some of you happen to see, you know, some of the stuff that I posted somewhere and you don't remember it now, but maybe you thought, I heard of this Wilson guy. I don't think it's the serial killer Gregory Wilson. He must be some author. I hate having the most average name in the world, by the way. Gregory A. Wilson, if you Google that, I am a biology professor, I'm a serial killer, and I'm a magician and a country musician. Did you know that? But anyway, so somehow that name sank into people's consciousness, maybe, and maybe that's why some of you folks are sitting here right now. But yes, absolutely, it's a teaser, and you can tease with a number of different things, games, music, podcasts, and even other forms of writing. Yeah, sure.
Have you ever had book trailers?
I haven't yet. I've seen people who have done book trailers. In fact, my friend Brad, the co-host of this show, Speculate, did a book trailer for his book from Nightshade Books. That book, by the way, is called The Winds of Kalakovo. I'll give him a plug, because if I don't, he'll be mad at me. The Winds of Kalakovo is the name of the book, and he did a book trailer for that, which I thought was really, really good. I'm sorry?
What's a book trailer?
A book trailer is kind of a YouTube video, let's say, or a video which you can post even on your site. That's a little more complicated. YouTube, anyone can upload a video. And it's basically just a minute or 2 minutes of kind of like a movie trailer, but it's for your book. So normally there'll be some still shots and some exciting text, you know, in a world of adventure, when one child is fought, you know, that kind of thing.
James Patterson has them on TV all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like James Patterson, you know, has people like him.
James Patterson is one of the best-selling out at least a book a month,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Co-written with various people.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
But he's a big enough New York Times bestselling author that his publisher buys ad time during major TV shows.
Yeah, that's someday when I grow up, right? I mean, but he did it. I thought his book trailer looks really neat. That's another possible angle. Two caveats with that. One, if it's going to take you an incredible amount of time to do it, don't do it. Focus on writing. And two, please make sure that it doesn't look lame. Because I've seen some book trailers where it's like, you know, you see the one like Pokemon clip or something. Like if I'm talking about, you know, an epic fantasy, and then all of a sudden like Pikachu wanders across the screen, that's not the epic that I'm talking about. I don't choose you in that case. You know, like I don't. So please not lame. Yes, as long as I'm not doing it, please, God. Yeah, but so book trailers can be another possibility as well. By the way, if any of you have, I mean, we're all a science fiction fantasy crowd. We may know a few geeks. Let's admit it, we may. If any of you know people that are, you know, technically, you know, proficient, again, this person... Or are yourselves, yeah. So this man. So go give all your requests to this man. But if you are technically proficient, or you have friends who are, that makes some of this easier for you in that you're able to do some of the website coding. I am fortunate in that, although I love technology, I'm not proficient myself, but I have lots of friends who are. So my friend Brad did the website, speculatesf.com. In fact, if you want, after this is over, I'll show you guys the site on this wireless internet if it's working. So he was able to code it for me. Another friend of mine did my personal website. He happens to be a web and an Android designer. Why do I know him? Because I was his debate coach, okay? It just happens to be my personal background that lucked out, but all of you have friends, all of you have family, all of you have people that you might be surprised the kind of abilities that they have, which they could bring to your attention. Maybe they're not the technical expert, but they have friends who are. And in that event, you could go talk to them about giving you some help. And you'll find that a lot of them will be flattered and anxious and excited because it's also stuff that makes them look good. I think my website is great. I'm really proud of what my friend who was the web designer did, and that's something I can point to and say, you want to see a good web designer? Check this out, because this guy did it. And so that helps him in turn. And that's really a benefit if, like I was when I was starting out, I didn't have a lot of money. What I had, theoretically, was exposure and the ability to promote these other people's work as well. And so that's another thing you can consider too. So I think we have about 5 minutes. I actually think we ran over, but I think everyone's over in Kirk Poland having fun with bad writing. So. Well, I don't
know. You guys are
coming in here, so
this is like a huge topic.
Well, you know, something I want to say to that. Gen Con does a good job at focusing at some of the nuts and bolts of the publishing industry. ReaderCon is a different kind of convention that doesn't do as much stuff with that, but I'd like to do more of it. I'd like to see more of this kind of talk, because I think, I don't know whether all of you agree, I guess you are because you're here, but some of this practical stuff, as a beginning writer, for me, would have been helpful rather than just stuff about content. And don't get me wrong, that's extremely important. Like, the content stuff and learning all this exciting stuff about different authors is obviously the reason we do this in the first place. That said, I would have liked some guidance from someone who did this stuff before. And when I went into that panel in 2005 with this guy who ultimately purchased my book, who bought my first novel, I was going there in part because I'm like, oh my God, this guy has practical advice about how to get published, and I'm trying to sell this book. And it was a lifeline, you know, thank God, someone is going to tell me something I can do. And that, I think, is something I'd like to see more of. So hopefully, if the ReaderCon people are listening, please do more of this, because I think it was helpful, it would have been helpful to me, and hopefully will be helpful to you guys too. That's fair.
You know, the you write a web serial, it's very different from writing a novel. And,
right, that's true too. You know, maybe that's changing. Maybe we'll get more of that sort of thing in discussions, you know, going forward, I hope so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
sure. Yes.
When you put a podcast, let's say, up on one of these sites,
yeah.
Say Absolute Right?
Sure. And I should say, by the way, a link. It's not that you post the site. It's that you post a link to your site, which has the podcast or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The podcast.
Yep.
Okay. Now, broadcast means there's an appointment you make to listen to something that somebody's broadcasting. Does podcast mean that something's up there and stays up there?
That's correct. That's correct. Till from now until...
After?
That's correct. You can download that. As long as your website's up... As long as your website's up, your podcast will be up. There are some people who do both, by the way. If anyone knows Jim Freund, who's here and does the Hour of the Wolf show, Jim Freund does a streaming show online in addition to, if you're in New York, you can get it on the regular broadcast radio, but you can also listen to it on the internet. Later on, you can then get an archive of that show, which essentially is a podcast as well. So there is streaming that gets done. For me, that's a little bit beyond what I'm not in the position, I also have a 3.5-year-old, like I'm not in a position where I can start scheduling, you know, like my daughter would not, that would not go down. But yes, podcasts essentially can stay up there until time immemorial.
Stay up where exactly?
On your website. So if you're on your own website, correct. And as I said, it can either be one that you've had coded for you by a friend, or it can be one using one of many, many templates that are free. I mentioned Blogger or Blogspot. If you do something like LiveJournal, LiveJournal is less focused on audio files and more focused on sort of blogging, so, you know, putting blogs up there. But there are other templates that you can find for free that you can use and that can get you started, that will allow you to upload these podcasts, and they'll stay up there forever until the site gets, I don't know, unless the internet gets shut down in some horrific dystopian future. But yes, they are. Most of them are free. You can also you can go the whole hog. You can start paying money for some of these services that promise bells and whistles. But the basics are what matter, which is getting a site, having a distinct address, and, you know, having a podcast that can go up there. And most of the free services can give you something of that kind.
Well, for podcasts, you typically have to pay for storage space.
Not always.
Take up a lot of space.
Yeah, but not always. That's not always true. There are some sites that will allow you to store it, and I'm not thinking of them off the top of my head because I don't use that. Now I use my friend's site who is able to store it for me for free. But there are sites that do it, and I did it initially with some of my early podcasts where you could put it up there for either free or very, very cheap. So
yeah, I mean the average by a domain and by site hosting is not that much.
Right. Right.
But audiobooks, the website.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
I know someone who started posting his books as audiobooks, and he quit his day job because he became so popular. And
oh, wow.
He had a small press buy his books and release them in print editions based on the success of the audiobooks.
That's cool. Audiobooks is, by the way, PODIOBOOKS.com, I believe. I think it's .com. Now, one caveat about that. That is the exception rather than the norm. So don't think I'm going to reduce a Podio book and next day fame and fortune. not likely, but it's something which at the very least will again continue to get your name out there, which is one of the things that you want. So, yeah, sure.
Just wondering, your podcasts, are they essentially readings? I'm not sure if you exactly do it.
Depends.
I actually come with storytelling background.
Okay.
And I've done a number of public performances in the past.
Okay. That, by the way, is a unique skill you can leverage, so that's good.
Yeah. But I was wondering if, instead of focusing on getting written word out, mm-hmm. I think you just answered it, which is essentially getting out kind of an audio book, which then goes into print late.
Mm-hmm.
And it has any, I just heard of one success case there. Have you heard of others?
Yes, I have heard of others. There is a guy named J.C. Hutchins who has released a lot of his stuff as Podio. I don't know if it was on Podio Books specifically, but he began in that form. Was it Podio Books that he did initially? But he, I mean, he's, speaking of Pat Roth as being a machine, he's a machine too. I mean, he somehow got voice actors and you know, soundtracks, and I mean, that was stuff beyond, you know, what I was going to be able to do with some of my, you know, kind of connections and credentials and so forth. But there's certainly quite, you know, people that do that. I do, again, want to make this caveat, though, and that is I do think it's important to always have as your baseline the writing first. And the reason I say that is all of these things really are means to an end in a way. They're things which you should enjoy separately, as I said. So you should... You shouldn't do it unless you enjoy podcasting. But in the back of your mind, as far as promotion is concerned, the number one thing you have to do is work on the writing first. So there are a few cases where people, I also know of some people who are really, really good at reading their work and really good podcasters, and the stuff just doesn't hold up on the written page. It just doesn't hold up in print. It sounds great, but it doesn't sound great when you're reading it. And so I think the number one thing that we as aspiring authors, writers, people who are in the field have to do is focus on this first, and then the kind of audio connections to it and all that second. But that said, yes, there are certainly success stories that are out there.
I will say that giving stories is very difficult once you write them down. I tried myself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it definitely has a different feel. It's what frustrates me about people like Neil Gaiman, who are exceptional at both. and that's one of those, oh, why do you have to be that guy, Neil? But Neil is exceptional at reading his own work, and his work also obviously holds up on the printed page. So, but yeah, it doesn't always translate. That's true. Anyone else? Sure.
How much time do you spend editing your podcast?
That's a good question. For Speculate, which normally runs from about a half hour to 45 minutes, I will typically spend about, soup to nuts, probably 4 hours editing it. And that's a combination of sort of cutting out ums and ahs and occasional Skype problems. If you've ever used Skype and you ever hear as if someone has just suddenly become a robot, you know, they're speaking an "arr," you know, because something happened in Skype. That's something which editing is necessary to do to remove. And so it normally takes me about 4 hours to do that and post it to the site. And one of the important things that I have to do is make sure that I don't bite off more than I can chew. So we keep a very strict limit on the amount of time the show goes. So it's not just, well, we'll just ramble on and talk for 2 hours. That's not going to be interesting to anyone to listen to, and it's going to be hell on earth to try to actually edit it. So keeping it at a limited level and saying we're going to round half hour, we're going to wrap it up, I think is something which you can do and budget into your week and budget into your time schedule without, again, exhausting you and taking you away from the most important thing, which is writing. The other thing about podcasting is to keep a regular schedule. It's usually a good idea to try to get out a show at least maybe once every 2 weeks, something like that. If you go longer than that and you release a show every month or every couple of months, it's just hard. People stop, they forget about it, they don't think to go back to your site, they unsubscribe from it. It's something which you want to kind of keep in their mind, and that means that you want to put a show up, again, once about every couple of weeks is usually a good sort of ratio. If you can do more than that, fine, but again, you know, eyes on the prize. The most important thing is your writing. But having said that, keeping a regular schedule is helpful, and that way you can use it to support your work and not detract from it. So, sure.
How do you keep your statistics?
I use a program called PowerPress, and it's PowerPress. That is a podcasting program which integrates with our website, which is run by WordPress. Some of you may have heard of WordPress. And again, I don't know the technicalities of WordPress because I don't do it. See my friend who knows technical stuff who did this. But PowerPress is a program which keeps its own statistics of downloads and hits. This is how I know about the joke I made about Pat being a machine. Because up to this point, we were getting downloads in the hundreds, let's say, for each episode. And we were ratcheting up. We were getting more every show. Pat's show, he mentioned us on his site, and we shot up within a week to 2,500 downloads of that show. And that's because Pat's a machine. So everyone went over and listened. And a lot of those people, since that time, we have seen subsequent shows go up. Why? Because some of the people who listened to the show said, you know, this is pretty cool even when it's not talking about Pat. And so they stuck with the show. They, in turn, hopefully, will stick with my writing, with Brad's writing. They'll want to learn more about us as more than just podcasters. And so I use PowerPress to keep track of specific download statistics for the site. Yeah. And PowerPress also, by the way, is free. I should have mentioned that, too.
Do you have any
Google has an analytics feature that you can use if you have your own web hosting. You can integrate that if you have a webmaster.
Yep.
You are so lucky to have one.
Yeah.
Married to mine.
awesome.
They can put a code on your web pages, and it'll keep track of downloads, page loads, all of that, how long they spend on your site, what links inside your site they click. It gives you a really rich picture of what your visitors are doing.
Yeah. Where in the world they're from, they'll do a little map showing you what countries people have visited your website.
That's right.
It's very entertaining to see the occasional clip from Siberia.
That's true. Apparently, Pat was very big in Liechtenstein. Who knew? Who knew? But a lot of the downloads came from there, too. Sure.
You said we shouldn't pay for advertising?
Yes. At least, certainly not early on.
Sure. What about selling ad space on my site to other people?
Again, I would avoid that early on, and the reason is because it makes you like every other person who sells ad space on their site, if you follow what I mean. It's to me, if I go to a site and I see a bunch of ads and pop-ups and all these things, I immediately think, it's like I don't want to deal with a used car salesman. You know, I just want to go and read some interesting content.
Is there any more small, tasteful ads, or just...
Well, maybe. I suppose it depends. That's true, and I think...
turn-off. If there's any ads whatsoever,
yeah.
as a visitor to websites, I do a lot of reading online, and I do not, if I see ads, I leave.
Yeah, that's my view too. I mean, later on, I think it's possible to maybe monetize what you do. That's possible. And sometimes you almost advertise by default. For example, Speculate, our show, has interviewed a number of authors from Nightshade Books because my co-host Brad has connections with Nightshade. So in a way, if you go there, you're going to be like, boy, these folks have a lot of anthologies from Nightshade. But we don't have a big, you know, and by the way, buy this at Amazon and da-da-da-da. You know, we don't do that. So I think the tasteful part of it is you're promoting by default, right? By featuring, in our case, we do this interview show. So by featuring these authors, we're promoting their work. But there's a difference between that and saying, you know, buy, you know, this particular, I don't know, this particular, you know, Kindle, or buy a Nook, or buy some kind of e-reader or something like that. That I think will turn people off. And by the way, about the Google ad stuff, if you were to do a Google ad and you're not careful, what will pop up on your site will be people offering, for example, self-publishing or vanity publishing, and that's a bad thing. Especially the vanity publishing is a bad thing for your future career. And you don't necessarily have the amount of control you'd want over that unless you spend all your time figuring out what Google Ads is doing, and once again, you're then forgetting about your most important thing. So I personally would stay away from the advertisement stuff for a good long time anyway, until things kind of change. And I think there's time for one more, and then I probably should wrap up because I don't want to get in trouble. Yeah.
Can I just make a quick comment?
Sure.
I actually was once an ex-VP of .com. And one thing we found is essentially if you have content or new content once a week, in our case it's really once a day, but you only need one article essentially to keep the flow going. And I was also thinking about if it's not as advertising, but essentially, it's the content that people come for. So if you can cooperate with other people and they are making changes to their site and essentially get into a small group, I think perhaps that might work better than to
correct. And the way to do that is to, when you construct your website, have a section that you call links. And the links section is where you link to friends, fellow authors, editors, publishers, sites of interest, because that is how you begin to build a small online community, let's say. And they, in turn, hopefully will reciprocate and link your site to theirs. And that's how you begin to start this kind of concentric circles, right, of all these communities that kind of bring you together. So, yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you. I'm so glad you all came Saturday at 9 p.m. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.